I truly believe that specialists get paid and generalists don't. And the reason why I say that is because oftentimes when you're engaging and applying to different opportunities, there are codes attached to them. There are certain categories attached to them because they're very specific to the matter at hand, right? That's why specialists get specific. And when you can pioneer in a specific lane, the demand for you increases because there's a scarcity of people pioneering in that space because it's a specialization. People often tend to be generalists. So you never want to be a jack or Jill of all trades and a master of none. Now, there's a place to have a foundational baseline understanding of many different things, but then you want to specialize. Some people call it the niche. Hey, it's W.E. DeCruz, and welcome to From the Desk of the Digital Diplomat. Here in our subscription access to my podcast, the Digital Diplomat Podcast, you're going to sit alongside with me at my desk, learning how I navigate people, policies, and processes from domestic, local level to global engagement. Here on this subscription, you are going to absolutely learn everything that I do from a personal to professional level of engagement in becoming the digital diplomat and helping so many people like yourself within your very respective industries engage organizations like the United Nations, the U.S. Embassy, different domestic, state, federal corporations and councils, how to really position and posture yourself as an authority locally and global leader. From the Desk of the Digital Diplomat offers resources and information in a very direct, linear, conversational way that makes sense to anyone who is not familiar with the intersection of digital development and diplomacy. I am so excited to sit alongside with you here at my desk. It's my most intimate and personal space. Everything that happens to me, for me, through me, with me, happens here at my desk first. So I'm super excited to welcome you into my world. Let's get going. All right. People are always coming to me and asking me, W.E.G., how are you traveling around the world? Like, I want to take my local business and impact the global environment. How are you doing it? So let's get into this. Let's talk about navigating the global international business environment. Have we mastered the maze of the international environment? Well, let's just start with the baseline. How does the economy work? In order for you to start to transact in a global environment, take your local impact and expand it globally, you've got to understand the basics of the economy. So how does the economy work? The economy affects us every day, but we rarely think about how it works. For example, what's your definition of the economy? Like, how do you define the economy? Have you even thought about what the definition of an economy is, right? The economy is defined by the way a country uses its resources to make, sell, and buy goods and services. So what are goods and services? Well, by definition, goods are things that are made, sold, and purchased. We engage with goods each and every single day. It's how we navigate our day-to-day lives. This can be food, clothing, and other tangible items. On the contrary, services are things that a person pays another person to do. So, for example, consulting is an example of a service offering. So, in addition to understanding the difference between goods and services, it's very important to understand it as it pertains to resources. It's important to understand that an economy is broken into two parts, okay? It's broken into what a country has and how it uses what it has. This is the determinant of how we engage on a very basic level. Let me break it down. Stay with me. Resources can be compartmentalized into three essential parts. There's natural resources, there's capital resources, and there's human resources. These definitions are super critical because it's how a country's economy thrives. It's partly based on its available resources. So your experience, your day-to-day experience, depending upon where you are, what city, state, country you live in, is very dependent upon these very three essential parts: natural resources, capital resources, and human resources. So what are they? Natural resources are things such as like water, oil, soil, wood, precious stones, minerals, coal, etc. Capital resources, you're looking at cash and property, for example. And human resources, people, right? You and I, our skills, our intelligence, our ideas in making, selling, and buying. This is really important because you have to ask yourself, which available form of resources do I have to offer or does my organization engage with? Super critical. So I ask you again, which available form of resource or resources does your organization engage or you as an individual? How you answer this question is how you've now postured yourself in this global economy or in how this economy works. And so once you understand that, you have a baseline understanding of how you can transact in the global economy. If you don't understand this baseline, you cannot transact internationally, globally, effectively, and efficiently. And so once you know this, then you can begin to engage with entities like the United Nations. For our perspective here based in the U.S., the U.S. Embassy, but this is relevant to any country's embassy in another country. So say you're from Ghana. From your perspective, you'd want to look at where all the Ghanaian embassies are around the world, because the embassy's intention and responsibility is to really drive and grow the economy of that nation. And that economy is based on the very things that I just shared. It's resources, a country's resource on how it makes, sells, and buys goods and services. Okay? So once you understand that, then you posture yourself accordingly. You identify your value in the marketplace and how you can better serve or supply these entities, these international entities. And I encourage you to engage in these international entities because they become multiplier effects. I probably have to do a whole podcast on the strategy around multiplier effects. But nonetheless, let's get going. So now that you know how to posture yourself, now you can begin to really navigate securing global success. And so when I introduce anyone into the global environment, you first have to understand the language which you're getting ready to transact in, right? Domestically, locally, specific to different nations. Like everyone speaks a different language. Some of them have overlapping terms and understandings and common glossaries. But basically, the point is you have to understand the language in which you're looking to transact in. And so there are a number of terms that you want to understand. There's a glossary of terms that you want to understand when you as a business owner want to begin to do business internationally or with these entities. You have to understand procurement, which is the process of acquiring goods, services, or works from external sources. You have to understand supplier. Supplier is an individual or organization that provides goods or services to a buyer. Then there's a vendor, which is synonymous in many ways to supplier. It's an entity that sells goods or services. And the vehicle in which you engage in procurement, supplying, and vendoring is through RFPs, RFQs, so requests for proposal, a formal document that outlines the requirements for a project, solicits proposals from potential suppliers, and really helps vendor selection, the entire vendor selection process. Then there's requests for quotation, which is basically a document that asks suppliers to provide quotes for specific products and services. There's also something what we call RFI, which is request for information. This is like a preliminary document used to gather information about potential suppliers and their capabilities before issuing an RFP and RFQ. Just depending upon who you're engaging with, depending upon the entity you're engaging with, there's more steps or less steps, right? Then there's the bid, a bid. This is a formal offer submitted typically by you, a supplier, in response to an RFP, RFQ, or a tender. So what's a tender? Like WE, girl, all these glossaries. Listen, if you can't speak the language of the people that you want to engage with, baby, you are already in a deficit. So I am giving you the language because you cannot create anything in life without language. Language is the first form of creation. So what's a tender? A competition process in which suppliers like you and I, supplying our goods and services, whether product or service, submits a bid to win a contract or a project. And a contract is simply, as you know, a legal binding agreement between a buyer and supplier, outlining the terms, the conditions, and responsibilities. And then there's purchase order. From the product-based perspective, I deal with purchase orders. I didn't necessarily ever deal with purchase orders as a service-based supplier. But I'll tell you, the purchase order is simply a document issued buyer to a supplier indicating the products or services to be purchased. So we get purchase orders all the time from our distributors. At the Mushroom Angel Company, we get purchase orders from restaurants. We get purchase orders in terms of like what they're looking to purchase. And really, it's very similar to like an invoice. And then there's TOR, Terms of Reference. So Terms of Reference, this is Typically, procurement and project management refers to this document to outline the objectives, the scope, the tasks, and responsibilities of a project. And so terms of reference can differ from an RFQ, RFP, right? You can get a TOR doing work with an entity like the United Nations or a particular agency within the United Nations and never necessarily get a RFP, RFQ, and all those other things, which also outline in many ways terms of references, right? I don't want to bog you down with the glossary of terms, but I want to just introduce you to them if you've never heard of them before, because you need to know them in order to transact and really win bids and projects and engage in the global environment. Now, a lot of these terms are also used domestically when you're dealing with state entities, local entities, city entities, etc., right? But the way in which they're used sometimes can differ depending upon the project, depending upon you as a supplier, whether you're service-based or project-based. So once you understand the language, now you can begin to decipher the different funding mechanisms. So there are a number of funding mechanisms that are available to you to do the work that you're called to do. This differs from nonprofit to for-profit. This is why I always encourage my mentees and those that I coach that you should have a for-profit entity and a nonprofit entity, because depending upon the project at hand, you'll have to use the varying vehicles to be able to actually submit a successful bid. So briefly, I'll introduce you to the UN. The United Nations system, this is like a huge multiplier effect. If you're looking to engage globally, you want to engage with an entity that's already in various nations, that's already engaging and has an interest in impacting various nations. So United Nations is a great example. There's so many others, but United Nations is a great example to use in this case. So let's look at the UN. The UN is comprised of more than 30 affiliate organizations. You may have heard of UNICEF that deals a lot with children. You may have heard about the United Nations High Commission for Refugees. Oftentimes when you see a lot of refugee work happening in different areas, typically the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees is engaged in that project somehow, some way. There's also entities like United Nations Development Program, UNDP. A lot of acronyms are used in the global environment. And for example, let's say you do work in Africa, for me in my case, UNECA, United Nations Economic Commission for Africa. You don't have to engage with all 30 entities. You can identify which one aligns with your goal and your mission and your service offering or product offering, and then master that maze, okay? So I have experience with the United Nations Economic Commission for Africa, terms of references. So these are the documents that outline the project and the goal at hand, typically within a thematic area. It'll also outline the expertise and the category in which I'm engaging with. So typically for myself, the thematic area would be like private sector development, technology, right? The expertise would be technology and innovation. The category that I would engage in is training, design, monitoring, and training impact assessment. So I truly believe that specialists get paid and generalists don't. And the reason why I say that is because oftentimes when you're engaging and applying to different opportunities, there are codes attached to them. There are certain categories attached to them because they're very specific to the matter at hand, right? That's why specialists get specific. And when you can pioneer in a specific lane, the demand for you increases because there's a scarcity of people pioneering in that space because it's a specialization. People often tend to be generalists. So you never want to be a jack or Jill of all trades and a master of none. Now, there's a place to have a foundational baseline understanding of many different things, but then you want to specialize. Some people call it the niche. On these terms of references, you'll also see like the start date, the duration, and you'll start to see important aspects of it, like the duration of the assignment and the timeline. Terms of reference differ often from RFPs because RFPs, while there is a timeline to complete the project, you submit the budget, you submit your timeline, your detailed timeline within the larger timeline on when you can actually execute on the project at hand. Term of references are a little different. There's already a set timeline that you have to commit to, right? Oftentimes on the terms of references that we get, it'll let you know like 1 week after you sign the contract, this is the activity that needs to be done. A week after the submission of that first activity, this is when this report needs to be submitted, right? So it's very structured already and you're just agreeing to the structure that's already at hand. The flexibility that you get with terms of references is really the way in which you go around executing the request within the terms, but the timeline is typically already set, as well as the pay. you do not negotiate typically terms of references. The pay is already in place. There's already a max amount that they're willing to give you. And then they break it down in terms of when that's going to be delivered to you based on the milestones of the timeline that they gave. And so we can't go into all the details right now, but this is just to give you an understanding of how this works and how you can begin to really navigate the global international business environment. It's important to, one, as I recap, to understand just the baseline working of the economy, two, the terms in which we use, the language in which is used in the global environment, and then deciphering the different funding mechanisms. There's so many funding mechanisms. I'll do another podcast specifically on funding mechanisms and how to transact from a nonprofit perspective and a for-profit perspective. But that's typically how you begin to posture yourself to engage in a global environment. I always tell people that the problem you're solving locally is a problem that someone needs to solve globally. The problem that you're solving in, let's say, New Jersey is a problem that someone needs to solve in Accra, Ghana. It's a problem that can be solved in any other location that you point to on the map, because we're all related in many different ways, ways beyond our understanding. The context and the delivery may shift a bit, but the problem is still the problem at hand. And that's what you have to understand as a service or product provider, that what you're solving locally could potentially be a problem that someone needs to solve globally. Listen, I'm W.E. DeCruz. I am so excited that you are joining me on this podcast. My whole goal for this podcast is really bridge and intersect digital diplomacy and development, but really help you ultimately impact locally and build globally. Until next time, subscribe, share, and let me know by sending me a message what are some questions you have as it pertains to impacting these very three areas, and I'll literally record a podcast to address it. God bless. If you like this episode, don't forget to subscribe, share a link to a family or friend, and leave a positive review. Also, check me out at thedigitaldiplomat.com for free resources and courses on helping people like you impact locally and build globally. And last but not least, check us out at the Mushroom Angel Company. Find out what we're doing to help solve the fight between whole foods and processed foods with mushrooms. See you in the next episode.